living.
I call the meeting in order, and if we can please ask guests here to be quiet and respect our process, we'd like to proceed. First of all, President Dean, move the minutes of the March 17th meeting. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails. The minutes are adopted. We have quite a lot of bills to do. One category are what I would call local bills, which are rate exceptions or moratorium exceptions or reconfiguration bills, those kinds of things. Typically, those bills have a fiscal note and will be held over for possible inclusion. And the chair has not quite figured out an entire process. We may need to do some additional data gathering. It's particularly important, I think, as especially for those where there are rate exceptions, that we have a good handle on what the cost comparisons for the proposal are as compared to others in the area or whatever regional choice would be made. Outside of that, I would ask, as a respect to the number of bills before us and the fact that these will be laid over, that we try to be as brief and succinct in our testimony as we possibly can. Given that, Representative Finstead, welcome to your committee, and would you like to make a motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move at this time House File 1407 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Service Finance Omnibus Bill.
Representative Finstead made the customary motion. Representative Finstead, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try to be brief. I had a half-hour presentation planned, but
I have a gavel, too.
With that being said, Mr. Chair, House File 1407 is essentially this. Currently in New Ulm, HSI operates a six bed ICFMR for gals ranging in age of 32 to 61 years of age. And what this bill asks for is an exemption or a moratorium on the moratorium to allow HSI to build a new facility for these gals. The current facility that these gals are in is a split level, and as they become older, it is getting harder and harder to work with and operate in a split level home. So what this bill allows for is HSI to build a new facility in New Ulm. This proposal was approved 4 years ago by the ICFMR Advisory Committee, and I'll let Mr. Devin Nelson here explain a little bit about the confusion in the end game of that approval. But with that, I think I will turn it over to Mr. Devin Nelson, the COO of HSI.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee. If you'd begin by reintroducing yourself.
Yes, thank you. My name is Devin Nelson. I'm the COO for Habilitative Services and Residential Advantages in New Ulm, Minnesota. Residential Advantages is actually the incorporated name of the ICFMR services. As Representative Finstead said, this home in New Ulm opened in June of 1982, and it's home for six people. We've been in the same home since we opened in June of 82. And 4 years ago, we approached the ICFMR statewide advisory committee to request funding to build an accessible home for the people living there. The home they're currently in is becoming more and more difficult as time passes, as people are aging. The fact that of all the stairs and accessibility makes it hard. Also, it's a four-bedroom home. We have four adults that are effectively sharing bedrooms right now. Our proposal was to build a twin home design, three bedrooms on each side, fully accessible housing that would meet the needs of these people and multitude of needs for the region and the community into the future. As Representative Finstead said, the proposal was approved in April of 2001. However, in the groundwork, there was an error made by the committee. They had the wrong rate information of our current rate. Our current rate was much lower than what they were basing their approval amount on. So consequently, we were left with not enough money to build the home. We were invited to return to the next meeting to seek approval and funding. However, in the meantime, the tragic events of 9/11 occurred, and the money and the ability to fund this dried up. Since then, the funding, there has been no dollars available, and this pathway of approaching the statewide advisory committee has not existed. We've looked at alternative ways of getting this done and really believe that this is the best for the state and the community. The ICFMR model allows us to have 50% federal participation at this time to cover the cost of the housing. So in a nutshell, that's it. Thanks again for the opportunity to speak on the behalf of the six people living there. Three of these people have lived together for the last 20 years in this home. So we're talking about a group of people that have really established their own home. The longest person there has been there for 22 years. Two people have lived there for 20 years, one for 17 years, and the newest people have lived there 8 and 4 years, respectively.
Jeff, do you have the current rate and what the rate will be when this is completed? Do you know that?
Our current per diem is $116.57. Right now, we're estimating that the proposed rate would be somewhere between $192 a day and $200 a day, depending on the cost of the housing. We have not rebid yet. We do have the land has been purchased, and the plans have been drawn up, but we need to update the cost based on the time that's elapsed. This cost is lower than the original request of $203.49. One of the changes we made was with Brown County's blessing is that we, instead of having two night staff, we'd have a twin home model. We would construct it with a pass-through door, allowing one person to be on duty at night and work between the two sides. So that does drive down the overall cost. However, we do not know the final number on the construction cost.
And, Mr. Nelson, what's sort of the acuity level of people who are there? I mean, it's a pretty significant amount of money when you analyze that. So what kind of people are we taking care of in this facility?
Okay. Five of the six individuals living there have a primary diagnosis of severe mental retardation. The sixth person has a primary diagnosis of profound mental retardation. One of the women there is also diagnosed with Down syndrome and Perthes disease. One of the people there is legally blind and legally deaf. So it's a multitude of other needs. The needs that are, as time goes, there are more and more impact on their lives.
And one final question for me anyway, Mr. Nelson. Do you have a sense of any other comparable ICFMRs and what their typical rates are in this, around the state or in your region?
Well, I think a comparable ICFMR, and I can get the information to Representative Finstad, I think the average per diem of, we're talking about a facility built to a Class B standard, the higher level, it would be upwards of $200 a day average.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, members? Go ahead, I'm sorry. What's that happen?
Same thing happened to someone else the other day. This is just a technical question for Representative Finstad. I recall on the House floor the other day, we passed a bill, I believe it was Representative Opatz's bill, about terminology. And I believe that we are trying to move away from using the term mental retardation. And you I mentioned as a medical term, and I'm just a little confused about the terminology and if this is the correct terminology to use in the bill. Not a big thing. I'm just wondering in light of the legislation that's moving forward. I don't know if you recall that, Representative Finstad.
Yeah, I respect your question. I think looking at the National Association, IAMR, is moving toward intellectual disability is where it's moving to. We would use the MR designation is more of a technical term that's recognized by CMS currently. We use developmental disability or related conditions in our agency when we're describing the abilities or the needs of the individuals.
I'm just wondering if maybe we should change this in the bill, just in respect to the other legislation that's going forward. Not a big deal, but...
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, I will be more than happy to sit down with you. This will be laid over for possible inclusion, so in the next weeks ahead, we can look at changing language if we need.
Okay.
Thank you. Be no further discussion. Renew a motion, or I'll just declare as a chair that House File 1407 be held over for possible inclusion in the Health Omnibus Finance Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norris. As Representative Norris comes forward, I'll move House File 1540 for possible inclusion in the Health Omnibus Finance Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you. Members, this bill before you is simply a request for a rate increase for a facility in Otter Tail County located in Battle Lake. And in the interest of time, I would simply like to turn the testimony over to the administrator of that facility, Jim Wolf.
Chairman Bradley, thank you for this hearing and members of the committee. My name is Jim Wolf. I've been the administrator there for just under 8 years, just beginning my 37th year. as a long-term health care administrator. With me this morning are a member of our resident family. Mr. Ronald Johnson's mother is a resident of this facility and has been there for about 12 years. And Susan Olson is a veteran nursing assistant, has been with us for, is a caregiver for over 12 years. I will have just three basic comments regarding this bill. Three very important points. Number one, this facility has the lowest operating rate of all 11 nursing homes in Otter Tail County. In fact, this nursing home's rates are lower also than all of the seven contiguous states that are contiguous to the Otter Tail County. The combined average operating rate of the other 10 facilities in Otter Tail County is $113.20, while the operating rate of the facility named in this bill is $100.65. That's a difference of $12.55 for each resident for every day of the year times 365. That's a huge amount of money. That this represents a huge disparity between this facility and the rates earned for care by residents who are being served in other facilities, some as close as 10 miles away from this facility. This facility gets no break from the licensing agency, Minnesota Department of Health, with regard to meeting minimum standards of care. In fact, the facility has averaged no more than three deficiencies yearly in the past 5 years on their annual enforcement surveys. My second critical point is the significantly lower operating rate has left this facility in a position of being non-competitive in wages with the other facilities in the county. In fact, we often refer to ourselves as the minor leagues in that other facilities in the county can come to our facility and market their needs for staff from our facility and easily lure them away because they're paying from $1 to $2 and more per hour for the same comparable positions. Our wages are not competitive. We are anywhere from $1 to $2 a day lower in wages because of our lower rate. For the three basic categories that we hire the most, RN, LPN, and CNA. Our turnover rate in these categories has increased by 100% in 2004 over 2003. The cost of bringing each new replacement employee on board is approximately $1,500. The recruitment cost, the training, the orientation, the staff time lost in this process, and the reduced productivity. My third critical point is the much lower than competition wages we are forced to pay have left the facility with a grave vulnerability in its ability to hire and keep staff, particularly in the skill areas that I referred to earlier. Roughly 75% of our staff are made up of RN, LPN, and CNA positions. This factor makes real the risk that this facility may in the future be unable to meet the demands of care expected by our residents and mandated by the Minnesota Department of Health. The significantly higher operating rates of the neighboring facilities, which I'm not saying is even enough, they need more as we do, but has allowed them to surge ahead in offering higher wage levels and often luring our qualified staff away from us. I'm thinking of one young man who has his last day of work today who is able to go to a neighboring facility for $1.20 an hour more, just 17 miles away. That's more than $2,000 a year that he can make in the same position in another facility. I ask you three questions. Do residents who call Battle Lake Good Samaritan Center their home deserve any less care than residents in neighboring towns? Number two, are staff working in this facility less deserving of an equally hourly pay than those working in neighboring facilities? And thirdly, do we wait until this facility is in a crisis mode and serious jeopardy is experienced by its residents before we take action to correct this injustice? Now, one would assume that this facility must be in very dire straits as far as the physical plant is concerned. I'm here to tell you that that's not the case. Because of the greater Battle Lake community and the tremendous resource development support they have given to this facility in the last 3 years, we have done this, all with fundraised money, purchased a new bus, built a new garage for the bus, replaced every outdated bed in the facility, We have carpeted all the common spaces and all resident rooms. We have been able to replace every window in the building that was outdated and allowing drafty conditions in the building. All of this with resource development from our community and our supporters. We have reached the point now where we have nowhere else to turn but to you. We are running a business, but we aren't really running a business. We feel like we are going under the waves, and we're looking for a straw to gather a breath of air now and then, and most of the times we're gathering more water than air. We simply need to pay our competitive wages for those that work for us, and this bill would allow us to pay a competitive wage, thus ensuring the quality of care of the residents who live in this facility. I would like to have Susan, our CNA, make a couple of comments, and then Mr. Johnson, who is a member of our family.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself again.
Good morning, Chairman, and Bradley, and committee. My name is Susan Olson, and I have been a nursing assistant at Bad Lake Care Center for 15 years, and I chose Bad Lake because it was close. I have stayed with Bad Lake because of the staff that work there and the residents who live there. The quality of care at the Bad Lake Good Samaritan is better than anything else. Okay, and it was so good that when came time for my grandmother to be at the nursing home, there was only Bad Lake that was considered, and she was there for 2 years, two wonderful years before she passed away. At the Bad Lake Care Center, every department puts 100% into the work that they do there. And we have one staff member who works part-time at another facility and part-time at Good Samaritan. She makes $2.06 an hour more when she works at the other facility, but she would prefer to work at Battle Lake because of the atmosphere there. And we have quite a few single income families, and it's a hardship for them when it comes time to pay the gas bill or the food bill or the electric bill or the insurance bill, or that they don't get a discount because they work at a low cost, low rate facility. I would like to thank you very much for listening to me this morning. Thank you.
One more quick. If we can be brief, please.
My name is Merle Johnson. I consider myself as a consumer of the services provided by the Battle Lake Good Samaritan Center. My mother's been there for almost 12 years, and my father was there until he passed away. Just to the bottom line, what Jim has outlined, and Susan, I would like to add that I hope we can get the point across here that if this nursing home should be one of the ones that we're reading about that would fail, it's not because of poor management. It's not because of lack of expense control. It's not because of high salaries. It's not because of the lack of business. It's solely due to the reimbursement rate that the state has provided. If this facility closes, the present residents and all future residents will go to another home in the area. And it seems to me that the state is going to pay the higher reimbursement rate just to another party, and actually I can't see where there's much of an increase coming here. You're going to pay somebody to take care of those residents. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. President Norris, there was an amendment in our packet. Did you wish to adopt that amendment?
Yes.
DE1?
Yes.
And it looks like
I don't have a copy of that here, but that's, is the language that the department had provided?
That's probably the case. I think the effect is the same. It may just be get cleaned up. I'll move then the DE1 amendment, which puts the bill in the form the author wishes. I'll understand that. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. I have just a couple of questions. First of all, Mr. Wolf, is your facility under APS?
We are currently, yes.
Okay. What's the background on being such a low rate in comparison to the others in your area?
I talked with the mayor about our facility, and Mr. Estes this was a city-owned facility for many years, and the mayor indicated to me that the facility actually wrote the operation of the city wrote the operation in the mill rate of the city, and they subsidized the facility during the years they owned it. That had the effect of keeping the rates down and keeping us in a position of not being in competition. When the step-ups were made in 2001, the target rates were established. We were so far below the target rates that we were given the target rate, but the other facilities in the area were above the target rates, so when the COLAs were applied, the 3% COLAs were applied each of those 2 years, 01 and 02, the separation got larger because our rate was sealed at the target rate. And that's where the $12.55 below the average rate paid in the county has come from.
We did something, Mr. Wolf, with what we call prisoners of history, where we tried to move the lowest up. I'm assuming that you might have been a beneficiary of some of that.
We were moved up to a state target rate. Now, it's a state target rate and not a regional target rate. Mm-hmm. And that target rate may not have represented all the facilities in that county. And we were given the target rate in 2001. Mm-hmm. And you were allow the target rate for a 10% increase, but not more than a 10% increase in 2001 and 2002. Our rates were established through the Department of Human Services, and when I asked for a fiscal note on this bill, they printed out for me each of the operating rates of all of the facilities, current operating rates as of today, and those operating rates show us on average of $12.55 under the average of those other 10 facilities in the county.
And we do have a fiscal package, and it shows in fiscal year 06 a $49,000, and in 07 a $54,000, and then steady from that point on. And one final question. I believe you said the average was about 113. What would your new rate be with this increase?
Our average rate would increase about $11.
But I think the bill says that the 60th percentile,
50th percentile.
Of the county, wouldn't that put you then above the average, or are we talking about medians versus...
We would be, well, it's the 60th percentile of what the average is for the other 10 facilities.
Okay. And what was that number again?
Roughly $11.
Okay.
The number
it would be about 111 or so. That's close enough.
Okay.
I don't think there's any further questions. With that, I'll...
That would put us at $111.98.
Okay.
111.98.
Well, thank you for your excellent presentation. With that, we'll hold House File 1540 as amended over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Representative Erickson. Senator Erickson, you come forth. I'll... move House File 1307 for possible inclusion in the Health Omnibus Finance Bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I would also like, Mr. Chair, that you move the A2 amendment to put the bill in the shape that we would want it for our presentation.
And this is just to put in the form you'll be discussing this morning? All right, I'll move the A2 amendment then. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Bob Dahl, who is here from Elam Care Incorporated, will explain the amendment very shortly. But, Mr. Chair and members, this is a temporary rate increase to allow a nursing facility in Princeton to recover costs incurred as a result of the nursing facility survey process. I just want to briefly tell you that this is a marvelous facility in Princeton, a place to which I go frequently to visit. My own mother is in a nursing home in North Dakota, but this is a very special place in Princeton. But what happened as a result of the survey process is a rather confusing situation. Elam Home in Princeton was told that they could add residents, even though they were in an immediate jeopardy status. They did that, but then they were later told by the Department of Health that they could not receive reimbursement for those residents. So as a result, they were denied reimbursement for resident care for those admitted between January 8th of 2004 and March 19th of 2004. With that, Mr. Chair, I will beg your indulgence to listen to my testifier, Bob Dahl.
Well, I'm feeling sorry for you enough to be happy to move on.
Mr. Chair, for 2 days I had no voice, and after I did my bill in education policy, I got a bloody nose, so I'm not in good shape.
Welcome to the committee. Please reintroduce yourself.
Chairman Bradley, thank you so much. My name is Bob Dahl. I'm the president and CEO of the Elam Corporation. Elam Care is a faith-based, religiously sponsored organization. We operate a number of nursing home assisted living, senior housing, and home care facilities throughout the state of Minnesota. Representative Erickson, thank you for being here today and sponsoring the legislation. And thank the committee for giving me just a few minutes to explain our story and our reason for our special request for a temporary rate increase. The Elam organization is over 75 years old. Our very first building was in Princeton, and we've had a long history of community support and an excellent reputation in this town. In November of 2003, we began moving residents into a brand new section of the building. We had done about a $6.5 million renovation and expansion of the campus, this new building was the latest in design to enhance the quality of life of residents and technology gain efficiency in our services. We were extremely proud of this investment in the community, and shortly after opening, we had a waiting list for residents. Just a couple weeks later, in the end of November in 2003, a team from the Minnesota Department of Health came to do their annual certification inspection. This was the Duluth team that came for the inspection, and it did not go well. By the time the team left, we had been cited with 20 deficiencies, and more importantly, four of them were at a G level or higher on the severity rating, and we had also been placed in immediate jeopardy because the survey team was concerned about our brand new nurse call system that we had installed. Now, this new call system is new technology. Instead of bells ringing and lights going off in the building, it's a silent system. It's simply, when the resident activates the call bell, it simply activates the pager that resident's care attendant wears. On the second day of the survey, the system was malfunctioning. We knew about it. We had a backup system in place, a manual system of bells for the residents to use, and we'd alerted the technician to come and repair it, and he was on his way. Nevertheless, the survey team saw fit to put us in immediate jeopardy on that very day because of the nurse call system. Following the initial inspection, the team came back in January to do a revisit. Now, this Duluth team has an established pattern right now of when they return for a survey, they don't approve the facility, and in fact they generally find more citations, and that was our case as well. So we came back in January, did not clear us, and we began to ask them, does this mean that the remedies that were presented in a letter from them were in fact in effect, including a denial of payment for admissions? We were told at least three times that they were not in place. And in fact, based on their assurances, we continued to admit residents to the facility. Now, in the handout I gave you on the second page, there's a transcript of a voice message that we later received from one of the survey team members. And I have the actual tape of that voice message as well. But basically it says that even though we assured you that you were not in denial of payment, it turns out that you are, and it's retroactive to 11 days ago. So we found out 11 days later that we were in denial of payment for the residents that we had admitted. This entire process, the survey process, has been a financial hardship for the facility. Last February, I testified before this committee telling our story, because we were right in the middle of it at that time. One of the committee members asked, you know, what does it cost when a survey goes bad? What are the financial ramifications to a facility? And I can tell you, we've been tracking that cost. And we've tracked at least $390,000 of expense that we can directly attribute to this survey process. In addition to the financial cost, There have been other expenses that have been devastating as well. Immediately after the survey, the initial survey, our director of nursing and two senior nurse managers quit in frustration. Between the three of them, they had 62 years of service to our facility. At that hearing, when I testified last February, mine was the last testimony to give. And by the time I was done telling our story, many of the members were obviously angry. Following my testimony, the Commissioner of Health came forward to respond to basically a whole day of hearings on that issue. And all the Commissioner could say was, obviously, we have a problem here and we're going to look into it. Now, we absolutely and vehemently disagreed with the findings of this team. So following this initial set of actions, we took advantage of the new IIDR, the Independent Dispute Resolution Process, and challenged the most severe findings, those four G-level findings. We challenged those before an administrative law judge. We presented our case. The Department of Health was there to present their case, and we won on all four cases. The judge threw out one altogether, and he lowered the remaining three to a level of substantial compliance. We thought we'd been vindicated, at least our reputation had been vindicated, but shortly after that we received notice from the commissioner that she overruled the judge and reinstated all four of them, reinstated the immediate jeopardy, reinstated the G-level citations, and we were astonished, quite frankly. And I can't tell you, I can't speak for the commissioner, I personally have a suspect her motives for doing that, but when she did give us a rationale for her response, she simply went back to the data and information and opinions of the survey team to justify overruling the administrative law judge. The outrage here is that this should never have happened. This is a high quality facility, a high quality provider, and the outcomes for our residents are very positive. What was lacking, quite frankly, in this process is common sense and some competence, quite frankly, on the part of the survey team. So this new information, this new technology that we're using in our facility, this new wireless call system is working well and providing us with a lot of great data. On the handout I gave you, the last page of that handout shows just one of the reports that we can print off. A computer monitors every call made by a resident and the response by every care attendant. And we can tell you today that the average response time for a resident is less than 5 minutes. In fact, it's 4.3 minutes. And that's just wonderful technology that we're using. And I hope a byproduct of this is that the legislature will encourage facilities to adopt and try new technologies that are available so that we can become better providers and advance the quality of care of our residents as well. So from our perspective, we were the victim of an overzealous team. In fact, the report by the Department of Health indicates that this team had a reputation, and they have established the fact that this team hands out more deficiencies than any other team in the state, compounded by some bad information. Because of the extreme cost of this, the extreme nature of the findings, and the ruling by the judge where we felt we had made a compelling case, we're asking for compensation to recover some of the costs related to this survey. The amendment that Representative Erickson handed out would authorize the Department of Human Services to seek reimbursement for this funding from a fund called the Civil Monetary Penalty Fund that the DHS has in its possession right now, so that it would not actually cost the general fund any money. I'll end my comments there and answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Mr. Stahl, we do in the amendment, however, have a blank in the appropriations. We didn't put any number in there. What would be the right number that would need to be put in?
I believe the, I don't have it in front of me, there is a fiscal note for this request, and I believe it was around $130,000.
Yeah, if I look, the fiscal note tells us that in 06, $121,000, and 07, $11,000. So if the intention was to be $132,000, would that be the correct number?
That's correct, yes.
Now, why don't I move an amendment? At least then we make it correct then, that move to amend House File 1307 as amended by amending on the amendment that we adopted, the blank, we would put in $132,000. You all understand that amendment? All those in favor say aye. Aye. I'm sorry, Senator Goodman, to that question?
No, just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Should this go to the Claims Committee?
I don't know. That's going to be my next question about where, but I think for the time being, let's get the number right, but I think it's a fair question. I'll say the amendment before us is to put in $132,000 in the blank on line 8 of the amendment. You all understand the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The combination in the amendment that talks about using the civil monetary penalties and then we're going to pay for it general fund is a little unusual, but it does beg the question about other committees that this may need to go to. Representative Erickson, have you had any contact with anybody to know whether the claims or civil law or anybody else ought to see this because of that amendment?
Mr. Chair of the Committee, no, I have not. We drafted this amendment yesterday morning. However, I wanted to bring this amendment forth because I am not a legislator who tries to take from the general fund. I would rather find a creative way, in this case, to reimburse the general fund. So, as this bill moves along through your process, hopefully between you and me, we will know whether or not this needs to advance to another committee.
Well, Representative Erickson, the motion is to hold over for possible inclusion. We could still adopt that, but I do think, though, that we're going to need to check with the appropriate committees to see if there's other places that might need to see this. We can always then either pass it, come back, bring it back here, or we could do a floor amendment to change it as well. So I think we can leave it as is, but I do think we need to make sure we understand that. And I think you have to also understand that from this chair's point of view, I'm probably going to have to look at it that we're appropriating the money. The possibility of getting someday in the future doesn't change the fiscal note to me and the challenges that I have. So it's a dilemma.
And, Mr. Chair, I understand that. I just was looking for some kind of reprieve for the general fund.
The one thing Mr. Dahl and Representative Erickson just does, it does put numbers on something that I think this committee has shown a big concern about. And I can't stand entirely in judgment, but everything you say, and of course it's also backed up by case after case after case that I hear from all over the state, frankly, of something that, if I remember the words of the commissioner, even before the committee in the last biennium, basically admitting that it's a broken system. And the broken system is having its consequences. And the consequences, I think, truly are in terms of actual dollars and cents, as you've shown that. I mean, I can't stand an exact judgment whether your algorithms are correct, but I think it does put some indication that there are financial consequences as well as human consequences when a system that is supposed to protect the public, in many cases, in my own opinion, has gone awry. And that's a shame. It's a disservice to all of us, and I think I certainly call for we've got to do something specific. It's long overdue. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How does the 132 match up with the 393 on the sheet that you have handed out?
The 132 is actually the state cost because there is federal matching dollars and there are private pay dollars that make up the other two-thirds of that. So it's the actual cost of the state.
And, Mr. Chair, and so the legal fees and the consulting fees are included in the 132 then?
The 132 is the complete package of the second page of the handout that I gave you breaks down each of those components of the cost of the survey that we track by total amount and by resident day.
And maybe this is a question for counsel on this too. Typically we don't recover attorney's fees and consulting fees, and I'm assuming everybody that goes through this process, and there are some that prevail, they don't get their attorney's fees and consulting fees. I'm wondering what kind of precedent we're setting in this case to award, which may be a reason to go to claims, but to award attorney's fees in this, that concerns me a little bit.
I think it's a fair question, and I don't have any preconceived judgment about what the right amount for this committee could or should be, and whether or not there's any precedent. I don't know. I mean, I think it is fair to say that this is a facility, however, that these are real out-of-pocket expenses.
I'm not, Mr. Chair, I'm not contesting that. I would assume that there's similarly situated facilities who have had similar situations that have had to expend legal fees, haven't come here and recovered those fees. And so that, I'm not sure what kind of door we're opening if we do that piece of it.
Well, Representative Thiessen, I'm also mindful of the possible additional places that may. On the other hand, I'm also mindful that we have repeatedly reminded the health department that this broken system has consequences, and if there's other stories that need to come to this committee, then bring them, and we'll have to deal with them. That's the only thing I can say. It's a risk I realize. And I mean, I don't know. I just wish you wouldn't have to be here, frankly. I mean, this is
so
this
I.
is something else. Yeah, and I can't promise what the outcome can be for here, but I think your story does put some reality on impacts. Let me make sure that I've understood, though. I thought I'd heard it a little different. You said that all four of the independent resolutions had been overturned by the commissioner. I thought the commissioner had overturned one or something of those. All four?
No, she reinstated. She reinstated all of them, all of them to a higher level than what the judge had ruled. So what we ended up actually with were three different interpretations of what happened. We had the survey team's interpretation of what happened. We had the administrative law judge's interpretation of the facts, and then the commissioner raised all of those back up to different levels on some of them, reinstated them fully on some of them. So we had her interpretation of what happened. So,
Well, I'm not wishing to turn this into a full hearing with counter testimonies and everything, because frankly we've had some of that already. I probably do stand ready to hear from the commissioner, talk to the commissioner as well to get the other side. But for today, this was supposed to be just kind of a rate exception. Only yours is a little unique, I will admit that. A little bit unusual. Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is a question for you or for the department, but what I would like to know overall is how many appeals have gone in front of these administrative law judges, and how many have been overturned. And that's probably a question for the department, but this situation we have an appeals process in place, and then what's the point of having it if they're going to get overturned?
Yeah, so I think there's two forms. I'm assuming that you're talking about, I believe what's the two
IIDR, just independent dispute resolution process, which is what we use.
And I suspect you'd be talking about that one, because otherwise the other one is sort of in-house.
Internal to the department. And
is there someone from the department that could just give us kind of a quick number on this as far as the independent resolution, how many have been overturned? Now, how many have been overturned? Mouth from the committee, if I were you, I'd give a quick answer and then dodge and get out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Jay McLaren with the Minnesota Department of Health. And I don't have any of the numbers in front of me this morning, Mr. Chair, but I will go back to the department and gather those and bring them.
Yeah, if we could, I'd appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Erickson, if you could please help out by passing this by to see if there's anybody else that would need to see it, I'd appreciate it. Let me know what situation
is. Mr. Chair and committee, we certainly would consider a reduction based on legal fees also. So in your deliberations, we will understand. You will have to discuss.
We'll be holding it off for consideration, so I suspect that I'll have some deliberation and advice from other people as well. Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative, the claims committee, though, will give attorney's fees, and they've done that in many cases where there's been a dispute with the state. So that still, I think that this bill should be sent to the claims committee, and then you could get that issue resolved.
Mr. Chair, the committee, I'll visit with Bruce Anderson to find out.
Listen, I'm not as familiar with the claims process. Is it necessary to have a bill in order to go to them, or can you just go with a claim laid out?
Mr. Chair, you could just move this bill to the claims committee.
Okay.
And or she could just talk to I don't even know who the chair of the claims committee is this time.
It's Chris Anderson.
Chris Anderson. Okay. Well, we'll find out. Thank you. Be no further discussion. I'll hear my motion that House File 1307, as amended, be held over for possible inclusion. And although not part of the motion, really just remind us that we are going to look into possible change in the referral. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Our next bill is Representative Koss. Representative Koss, welcome to the committee. And I'll move House File 1699 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Health Finance Bill. Welcome to the committee. And did you have any amendments?
Okay. No, I do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. Members, you may remember I was before this committee a few weeks ago with a bill addressing the cost shift related to the county and state payments for intermediate care facility for mentally retarded. I'm back before you today with a bill that would allow this facility to physically break itself up into eight separately licensed facilities of not to exceed six residents. And the idea behind that is if the committee is not able to work within the parameters and do the feel of the county cost shift, which is significantly impacting the census in this facility, this is sort of a fallback position that would allow them to operate as the smaller six-bed ICFMR. That was this was done last year in the base of children's home in your committee, Mr. Chair, and I think it has worked all right. The funds to do this would be undoubtedly raised through different sources for facility improvements related to the facility rather than operational, and then it would be able to have a census, hopefully, that would continue to operate. It's an excellent facility in Belle Plaine, the Lutheran home, and it would be a shame to lose the facility to help the individuals that are being served now. And Mr. Chair, I have with me today Steve Wilson and Therese Coletta from the Lutheran home, and they would maybe have some things to add about the bill.
Certainly. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I will keep this very brief. My name is Stephen Wilson. I am the current director at the Lutheran Home Disability Services. We've been in operation since 1898, where we operate a 52-bed ICFMR that is called Hope Residence, where we serve individuals with developmental disabilities and many, many complex needs and issues that they deal with every day. We're asking that the safety net bill be strongly considered so that we can continue to protect our residents and their families to meet the complex needs of the people we are entrusted to care for every single day. We also ask that Hope residents not be obligated to this legislation if, in fact, the cost shift, county cost shift bill is going to be repealed. We come to you on behalf of our current and future residents and their families as we currently serve 14 different counties here in Minnesota where people now live at Hope residents and originally resided in. We appreciate the opportunity to share this with you as we speak for the most vulnerable group of citizens in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Would you like to testify as well? Not available for question? Okay.
All right,
well,
we stand. Well,
Reverend Cox, let me, first of all, let me ask a question. Mr. Wilson, I don't mean this to be kind of catching, but I, in your best professional judgment, is the reconfiguration being done because it needs to be done for the residents, or is it being done because this is just sort of the new rules or whatever? I mean, is there really a good business case from both a human point of view and a dollars and cents point of view to do these reconfigurations?
Mr. Chairman, an excellent question. No, in my eyes, it is not ideal. This is needing to be done. However, what essentially would happen by doing this, if in fact the county shift will not be repealed and that does not take place, what essentially happens is we're breaking up families. And when you picture a large facility and a number of people who have lived with each other for a number of years and relied on each other and built relationships, it would be very similar to going in and breaking up your family. These people have relied on each other, have been dependent on each other, and have built very, very strong relationships. Along with that, it does pose several issues that we would need to deal with, certainly. We have the opportunity to offer excellent nursing services essentially 24 hours a day. We offer therapy services, recreational services to all these individuals. So essentially what it does is it puts a wall a sense to and between all these individuals.
And Mr. Wilson, then, if we were successful in eliminating the county shift, then you would not be making this kind of change? Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And Mr. Chairman?
I know where I want to be. For Senator Cox?
I would just like to add that a week ago Sunday, I was over at a home for an anniversary open house, celebrating an anniversary there. And if you representatives, committee members could see how this facility operates and the care and compassionate attitudes that are expressed for the residents and their families, this is not an ideal situation to break it up into six unit situations. But if that is a direction that the state cares to go rather than have them deal with the cost shift and not survive, I they're willing to do that. It would not be an ideal situation, though. You're absolutely right, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cox. And then maybe we wanted to put some numbers on it as well, because if there's not a programmatic reason, but it sure looks like from the fiscal note that there is a dollar impact of doing this in the order of about $700,000 for the next biennium. What is your current rate, and what would it go to if this reconfiguration were completed?
Our current rate is $177.21 per day per person for our per diem. And if I'm not mistaken, those numbers, as of where it will go, be honest with you, Mr. Chairman, those are things that we're obviously going to have to look at, due in fact to needing to explore exactly all the restructuring changes that need to take place to the facility if, in fact, we needed to do this.
But if I'm seeing, Mr. Wilson, look, I was trying to read through here, and I see 27 persons at 87, 90-something a day. I mean, are we talking about in the order of $80, $90 a day increases? Representative Cox?
Mr. Chair, I think what we've got going on here is we've got the two things on the residential services and then the day have services for the structures that as they are compensated now. The one question I have on the fiscal note, because I just received it this morning too, was I don't know how we could project exactly how many residents if this moves forward and they break it up into six unit residents. Mm-hmm. It's obviously licensed for 52 now. I don't know what the total census would be. I think this is really an unknown I think the fiscal analysis is correct with the information, the best information they had. But I don't know whether we can predict what the census will be if they move forward this way. I know they would lose some space in the breakup, that you couldn't simply just break it up into 8.5 units like this. And it remains to be seen that if, as I said earlier, if the cost shift repeal is not put in place and this legislation does move forward, they would then begin the plans to look at what to do to keep it alive. But I don't know, I'm pleased to see this big preliminary stamp at the top of this, because I think we would have to work to figure that out.
Well, it'll be in our committee being held over, and I'd appreciate your help in making sure this is right and that we properly understand it. My personal hope is that we don't have to go this way, because I've seen more than one of the ICFMRs and the old-fashioned one-size-fits-all, and we all have to be within a certain size, I think has made less sense over time as we see where we are today. I think you're a prime example of that.
Mr. Chair, you're absolutely right, and I think this large facility in Belle Plaine and Scott County here, as I said earlier, does a great job serving the needs in this family, large family setting. And I prefer also, as you do, to repeal the cost shift and keep them financially strong and the census up.
Representative Cox, as you and other people have a chance to look at it, and if you do find some changes or corrections in the fiscal note, our financial staff will probably catch that as well and get back, but just keep us in the loop so we're made aware as well.
We'll do that.
I see no further questions, and there wasn't anyone else that wished to testify. I'll renew my motion that... Representative Egan, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a technical fix here. On line 12, it refers to mental retardation, and I thought to be in conformity with the current language being used, maybe that should be changed. And I'm not sure what the correct current language would be, but maybe mental disability,
you know,
or...
Mr. Negan, it's been brought to our attention. I'm not exactly sure how the legislation that's moving through will deal with... the ICFMR is kind of an established trade name, mm-hmm. and that's all this is referring to. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest that we'd probably not modify it now and let the legislation that's going through. I don't know how they've accommodated, because I don't know that we're going to go out and completely change all the ICFMR facilities, their titles. So your point's well taken. I just don't know how the legislation is going to accommodate sort of an industry standard name. Mm-hmm. Is that all right with everybody?
I appreciate that and understand it. We have shortened that to ICFMR. There may be people that don't even know what that comes from, but Representative Eakin is correct that if that legislation is moving forward, then we'll, I assume, see a gradual shift away from it.
Yep. I renew my motion then that House File 1699 be held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Health Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Representative Rudolph. I'll move that House File 1599 be held over for possible inclusion. Be held over for possible inclusion in our health finance bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Riddle,
you have a delete all amendment.
Delete all, and that's the DE1, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, I'll move the DE1 amendment, and that'll be in the form that you'll discuss this morning?
Yes.
All those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Meeker County faces some unique problems, particularly in hiring and retaining staff, because of the proximity to geographic group 3, which is the metro area, and group 2, which is rural. Meeker County is in group 1, which is classified as deep rural. We have several towns and border communities in both geographic groups 3 and 2. Watkins is on the northern edge of the county line. The line runs right through the middle of Eden Valley, and only a few miles separate Dassel and Cocato, with the county line separating them. Litchfield is only about 10 miles from Dassel. Meeker County, I think, is unique. If you look at the map that's being passed out in the packet presently, because it is one of only a couple of counties that is bordered on three sides by two different geographic groups, Stearns being the other county, and Stearns had its status changed last year. Two facilities have closed recently in Meeker County. We currently have three. And so I appreciate your consideration of changing Meeker County's geographic designation from 1 to 3. And I have several people here who wish to testify on this today. The first is Julie Miller of the Dassel Lakeside Home.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Bradley and members. Thank you for listening to us today. I need to extend my apologies from our administrator. He did not know this was going to be held, and he is having a well-deserved vacation in Texas right now. So I did visit with him last night. So I'm not going to speak a lot about the exact rates. I don't want to be quoting something that I'm not sure of, but I would like to testify and talking about our staffing issues that we do deal with. We are a 64-bed facility in a very small community. Last year, our occupancy was 98.6%, and we were deficiency-free in October of this last year with the State Survey Department. 50% of our staff does not live in Dassel because of the small community. Most of our staff does come from Wright County, McLeod County, some from Stearns, and then Meeker. You will see our wage scale that we did pass out, and you'll notice at the top that this was effective November 3rd, 2002. We have not been able to increase our wages since then, and we also have had to decrease our benefit package. The one thing that we have not done and will not do is to cut staff. We feel that is for our residents and their care. We will not do that. In our particular case, we have had an LPN position open since November. We have had to be real creative in our staffing patterns. Our staff has been wonderful in picking up extra shifts, but it has come with a cost also of giving bonuses of $3 an hour on the weekdays and $6 an hour on the weekends, just so we can get some of those filled, which, of course, then is going against our bottom line, which I will tell you is definitely in the red this year, no matter how good our occupancy has been. We continue to advertise, but what we are finding is that especially new grads are doing telephone triages now. And what they do is just call our facility and other facilities and say, what's your bottom line? What are you paying for wage? What are some of your benefit package? And when we have to tell them what our wage is in comparison to the other areas, and there is a comparison in there from Burns Manor, which is McLeod County, we don't even see them come in our door to do an interview. And that's what we're facing. In Meeker County, the hospital is now going to critical access, and because of that, their wages are also going up, which will be another problem for all of us, along with the use of swing beds, which is a whole other issue. So we're just asking some relief because of our geographical thing and our ability to attract staff from the very community or the very counties that are able to charge more per rate because of the different groups that they are in. Just basically what I would like to say is somewhere along the line this system is broken and we've got to be able to get a handle on it so we can continue to serve the residents that we are serving at the present time. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Margie Anderson of the Emmanuel Nursing Home in Litchfield.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for allowing me to speak today. I am the director of nursing at a 110-bed facility in Litchfield. I have worked for this organization for 24 years in a variety of capacities and have been the director of nursing since 1997. It has become increasingly difficult for me to be able to recruit, hire, and retain good qualified staff. And I just reinforce what Julie has to say. We have to compete very directly with other facilities within our vicinity at wages that are anywhere from $2.50 to $4, up to $8 an hour difference on their wage scales. What I'm noticing is that the higher quality staff are being attracted to the better paying facilities. So the staff that we are able to attract are not the top performers that I would like to see, and I feel that as a result of this, the quality of care that we're going to be able to provide is going to diminish. We as well have not been able to offer our staff a wage increase for over 2.5 years, and it's getting harder and harder to tell our staff why they should stay with our organization, even though they are very committed to the residents that they serve and the quality of care that we have been wanting to provide and the values that we promote. So I ask that we be considered for some relief in this area. Again, with the local hospital in Litchfield becoming critical access, I know that right within our own community, we're going to have more competition for wage and individuals to fill our positions. So it's just becoming increasingly harder to feel good about where we sit with our competitiveness in the market. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
I have one more person. Mr. Tom Kleiman is the with the Painesville area healthcare system serving the home in Watkins.
Thank you. You can be as brief as possible, please. Appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm here on behalf of my organization, which ironically runs one nursing home in Meeker County, which I'm here for, and one in Stearns County. The Meeker County facility is located a quarter mile into Meeker County, just off the Stearns County line in Watkins, Minnesota. And what I want to show you is if you turn, I believe it's the second page in your handout, I just want to show you the rate difference between the two. Hilltop is considered a geographic location of one or a deep rural facility. The Cronus Manor is considered a geographic designation of two or a rural facility, and it is going to be going into the metro rates. But with that, if you look down the side, as you can see in the first or second and third columns there, there's a disparity of between $10 and $21 per resident day between those two facilities. Now, these two facilities are almost identical in the way they operate.
We pay the same wage scales. We pay the same benefits. We pay the same insurances. We have basically the same acuity and the same type of residents. But because we're located a quarter mile to the south of Stearns County, the difference in reimbursement is about $259,000 a year. And unfortunately, because of that, what happens is the Hilltop facility in Watkins loses about $250,000 a year, and the facility in Painesville is a little closer to a break-even operation. As you can see, there's a significant difference in the disparity. My coworkers and the rest of the county face the same issues. This makes it difficult for us to compete and even stay open in our facilities in Meeker County. And we would just ask your support and inclusion of this into your bill. Thank you.
And while you're here, if I may ask, the bill doesn't say anything about the raise being related to the specific county. It actually raises it to the median of the metro rate.
Metro rates, correct.
So can you give me kind of a where you are today in average rate versus where you would be if the bill is implemented?
I don't have those numbers right in front of me, Commissioner Bradley. What I know is that
I would be paid a lot more money if I were to make that.
I'm sorry. I will tell you, a little bit of a dilemma I'm in is our facility in Painesville, which is in Stearns County. Last year there was legislation passed to loop us into the metro rates in Stearns County. The department has not recognized that or reimbursed that at this point. So really the only thing I've gone off of at this point is the difference between what I'm currently getting paid at the Cronus Manor in Painesville and at Hilltop. I do want to mention one thing. Our organization closed a nursing home in Painesville in Stearns County about 2 years ago. With that, we took the and converted it to an assisted living. With that, we took our closure money and put that into the rates at Hilltop, and we still have a $10 to $21 a day disparity between the two facilities. And you mentioned earlier when Mr. Wolf was up here being a prisoner of history, Hilltop also is a prisoner of history.
So, did you get somewhat of an increase in based on that legislation?
Yes, we did.
Okay, yep. Thank you. Well, if we could follow up then, Representative Rudolph, it might be fair, I mean, since this is across the county, we could get some sort of comparison of what the current rates are and where they would be with this, because I think you're trying to move them to the median of the metro area. To be honest, I don't know if it's median or the 25th percentile or whatever. If it's a significant increase in lots of dollars, but we don't have an up-to-date fiscal note. The fiscal note, I believe, is to the original bill, which the way those worded didn't have any impact. I'm sure the new amendment will have, so we'll get an updated fiscal note.
Yeah, and I have requested that, Mr. Chairman, and it's being done.
Okay, and we can follow up, too, if you would help us out by getting the communication then of by nursing home what sort of the averages would be from and to. Any questions, members? Seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 1559, as amended, be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton. Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I've never been in
Hamilton. Mr. Hamilton, you got a lot.
Filling in for him. I got a lot more here.
Nice to meet you. Would you like to move the bill?
Yes, I would. I'd like to move House File 1716 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And the reason for this is, surprise, surprise.
Representative Samuelson moves House File 1716 for possible inclusion. Representative Samuelson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason is, surprise, surprise, it's a reimbursement issue. And this is a facility that basically got caught between the Rule 50 and going to the alternative payment system. And to describe the situation, I have Ron Donisick, who is the administrator at the Jackson County Nursing Facility.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Hello. Thank you for having me here, Chair Bradley, and the committee. I appreciate your time today to testify in front of you. Again, my name is Ron Donisick. I'm the administrator of Lakeview Home in Heron Lake, Minnesota, which is on the southwest corner of the state in Jackson County. And I'm here to talk to you a little bit about Lakeview Home. And in short, I'm going to give you just a brief synopsis of their services. They are a 35-bed skilled nursing facility, but they also provide an assisted living facility. They provide a transportation service for not only the facility but for the community at large. And then they provide an outpatient therapy program, physical, occupational, speech therapy for our community and the surrounding communities. So we do a lot more than just nursing home and care in our area. Back in July, to give you a quick synopsis, the board over at Lakeview Home decided to bring in a company called Ecumen. Ecumen is the largest nonprofit healthcare company throughout the state of Minnesota. They've been providing services for over 100 years in the state. And they've had a great or excellent reputation in assisted living, nursing home care, subacute, and the like. The goal of bringing Ecumen in at that time was to look at a couple of things. Number one, it was to assess the financial crisis that was affecting the home at Lakeview. And two, it was to try to come up with some potential solutions to that crisis. I'm going to highlight a few points of what I've seen when I first got there. And I know something's being handed out in front of you, which I'm going to highlight in just one moment. Point number one of 2 points would be when you just look at our current rates throughout the entire state of Minnesota, we do have the lowest rate structure throughout the entire state. Point number two is what you have in front of you. What I try to do is take a comparison off of from the Department of Human Services website of three county areas surrounding us. It's about a 25-mile radius of Jackson County, Cottonwood County, and Nobles County. And I've looked at the average rates for each of those homes in all those surrounding communities. And what you'll notice is on the first line to the left you'll see, or the second line to the left, is Lakeview Homes' rate structure of all the different rates. As you go across and close to the third column to the right, you'll see the average of all the remaining rates for those 9 other homes in that 3-county area. And you'll see the difference between our rate structure at Lakeview Home and the average of that 3-county area, or that about 25-mile radius. What you see is a difference in each rate structure from anywhere from about $12 to about $22 a day, or an average about $15.50 per resident per day. This is the main reason why we're having such a financial difficulty at Lakeview Home. Why has it happened? I have talked a little bit with the Department of Human Services, and I've done some calculations on my own part just in assessing the situation, and we have an educated guess. Currently, we're in what's called the Alternative Payment System. However, prior to the Alternative Payment System, or APS, was called the Rule 50 Reimbursement System. That system was based on your current rates were based on your previous year's costs. If you spent more, your rates went up. If you spent less, your rates went down. I think what Lakeview Home did way back, maybe a decade ago even, is they sort of lived or governed themselves under those typical rural mannerisms, trying to do what is best as efficiently as possible as they can with the dollars they have. Not overspending, not lavishly spending, just doing what's right with what they had. But consequently, their rates continued to drop over those years. When the APS system came into place for this facility around the year 2000, those rates were locked in. But while the rates locked in, their care levels continued to skyrocket. Today, the average case mix, or the care level in the state, is about between a 0.9 and a 1.1. At Lakeview Home, we're at a 1.08. So we're really over the average considerably when you look at the level of care we're providing at Lakeview Home. We come here today because we're looking for you as a last resort. We've had to make a lot of tough decisions in the last year. I'm going to name just a couple very briefly to you. One is we look at our nursing assistants. People talk about their rates here earlier, what they pay their staff. I'll give you an idea. Our average payment hourly rate for our nursing assistant is $8.25 per day. There's a home 10 miles from us in our current county of Jackson that's paying $10.60. That's a starting wage. And we're paying an average of $8.25. There's a considerable difference. Our starting rates for our LPNs, our nurses, are just over $11. So there's a very difficult area we're in trying to recruit based upon that and based upon our financials. Also, most recently, we've had to make a decision on our pharmacy. We've had always an in-house or in-town pharmacy we've utilized. We don't want to do it, but we had to look, in order to maintain the viability of the home, we had to look at trying to find an outside pharmacy provider, which is what we did. We needed to do that to continue with the viability of the home. In short, I guess I'm here today to tell you this is a good facility. It's a good home. It's got good staff. It's got good residents who want to stay there. But we're in a dilemma right now. We've made a lot of tough decisions during the last year. And in summation, we're not looking for the best rates in the state. We're not looking for the best rates in the county. We're not even looking to shoulder comparable rates to the county. We're just looking to get in the ballpark right now in order to run a good, solid, financially efficient home. That's the goal. That's the issue. That's the challenge that we're facing. And I'm happy to be here today, and I appreciate your time, and happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you for your testimony. We have a fiscal note in front of us that would show that in 06, 32,000, and 07, 35,000. That's the amount of money that would be involved in this proposal. And in your case, you're calling for a specific increase of $9.25 in your rates.
Yes.
Any question, members? Seeing none, I represent Samson Manuser motion that House File 1716 be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I think we'll skip to Representative Hilty because I know he has some people that have come from a long distance. So, Representative Hilty? While you're coming forth, I'll move House File 1557 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Health Finance Bill. Representative Hilty, we do have additional bills, and I know you come from quite a distance, but keep it as brief as you can, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We will indeed. I will cut right to the chase. House File 1557 asks for a slight rate adjustment due to a somewhat unique circumstance that I will have Mr. Larry Pank, who's the director of the Interfaith Care Center in Carlton, explain to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. I will make this brief. I am the administrator of Interfaith Care Center, which is a nonprofit corporation consisting of six area churches. In 2001, we built a new facility which replaced our old facility. That went through the moratorium exception process, so it's obvious that we needed a replacement facility. The facility is about twice as large as the old facility. It has central air conditioning. It is required to meet the new air handling requirements that I would venture to say most nursing homes in the state don't meet because of their age. A lot of differences in utility use from the old facility. And yet the statute indicates that we have to take our operating costs from the old facility and transfer them to the new facility. That simply does not work. Our utility costs are higher. We knew they would be higher. We did everything energy efficient we could in this new building to compensate for that, and yet there still is a discrepancy in our old building to our new building as far as our utilities are concerned. So we are requesting a relief in that area, and that's the story.
Frank, let me make sure I've understood. Maybe I was just too much generalizing. I thought when we had a moratorium exception and there were new operating expenses that those were taken into account in the new rates that there are. But you're saying in some area they're not?
That's not correct. We maximized our per bed limitation. There was no additional recognizing of the potential for increased rates or staffing. We have to indicate that in the moratorium process, but it is not changed in our rates.
And so, Frank, if you can, you have any kind of data in terms of what your current rates are as compared to other nursing homes in your area?
Our current average is about 150. I don't have the statistics compared to other facilities in that area, but I would venture to say we're not at the higher end in comparison, but I don't have those figures.
Maybe Representative Hilty, if you could follow up and get that information to me, just give me at least some comparisons in the area where we are.
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate it.
And you have to realize this is a brand new facility. There are no other brand new facilities in the area to compare it to either. So
I understand. I'm looking for at least some indices there of comparisons when we're looking at how we're going to handle quite a few of these kind of proposals. Any further questions, members? Well, thank you for making a long trip, I realize.
Well, thank you. We have we have the Department of Health there as we speak, so apparently the DASL representatives don't have the Duluth team that surveys them if they had a deficiency-free survey. So I have to head back to a survey.
Well, thank you very much for being here. Let me ask one representative Hilty. The bill has a blank appropriation. I don't know if it's really necessary. We do have a fiscal note which shows expenditures of $36,006 and $40,007. I don't know that we need to amend to put the amount in because we can certainly work that out as anything comes back. But, Michelle, do you have any advice as to whether we should amend the bill and put an amount in there?
it is members and Mr. Chair, it is customary prior to the bill leaving this committee to make sure that those fiscal amounts are actually incorporated into the bill. If this particular bill is being laid for consideration in the omnibus bill, then we haven't left committee yet. So I think for the consideration part, we're okay.
Fine. So that gives us the flexibility as well. If the numbers change, and sometimes they do, we won't worry about making the amendment then. But we do have the month before us. I renew my motion then that House File 1557 be held over for possible consideration in our omnibus finance bill. Thank you
very much.
Is there anyone else that might have testifiers that came from a distance? Representative Solberg, did you have? Representative Huntley, you did? Okay. Representative Huntley, would you like to do a bill? Representative Huntley, welcome to your committee, and would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd recommend that, or move that House File 1151 is it laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Representative Huntley moves House File 1151 be held over for possible inclusion. Representative Huntley?
And Mr. Chair, I have an amendment that is a DE1.
Huntley moves Amendment DE1, and it looks like this is kind of the customary new, the language that works,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
All those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, this relates to the Chris Jensen Nursing Home in the city of Duluth. It is owned by St. Louis County. It is now the, I think, sole nursing home owned by the county. We did own two homes and the one at Nopenning, just outside the city of Duluth, has been closed. This facility has a difficult time meeting its financial obligations, and it currently has been running a deficit for a number of years. And that deficit is picked up by the property taxpayers of St. Louis County. I have Deb Kempe here. She's the administrator of Chris Jensen Nursing Home, and she can describe the situation there.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to address my concerns here on behalf of Chris Jensen Health and Rehab Center. We are asking for a rate increase to offset the financial losses that we have incurred the last several years and that we project for the future. Our state's nursing homes are in financial crisis. You've seen the headlines in yesterday's news, about 25% of them at risk of closing. Chris Jensen suffered about over $800,000 loss last year in 2004. A $10 per day rate increase would equal approximately $660,000 in revenue for Chris Jensen based on medical assistance and private pay rates. That rate increase would not even cover the loss we experienced last year and doesn't guarantee that it would cover cost increases that we anticipate for 2005. We haven't had substantial rate increases to cover our costs in the past 3 to 4 years. What rate increases we've had have gone towards staff wages, and yet our facility has had to continue to absorb costs. I came to work in long-term care after working 16 years in acute care hospitals with attached nursing homes. I wanted to be part of the process of implementing quality standards in long-term care facilities after the Federal Nursing Home Reform Act was passed. I've seen our industry in perpetual conflict over the needs of our residents and the reimbursements that we receive to run our facilities. I've worked in 3 different nursing homes. All of the facilities had trouble, and I represent nursing homes on the board at care providers, and I see the financial crisis very clearly. So in conflict between staff and administration, between the board and administration, families concerned about not enough caregivers to meet the needs of the residents. State licensing agencies and survey teams are telling us we need more staff. We're not getting it done, getting the job done. We're not getting to every resident, giving them the assistance they need with toileting or feeding or whatever.
We recently spent taxpayer money in Minnesota to determine a staffing ratio that would come close to meeting the needs of the residents in our facilities, and nobody has had the guts to discuss that staffing ratio. Chris Jensen had to increase their staff last year to a level of 4.1 nursing hours per resident day in response to a state survey mandate that we did not have enough staff. I tried to reduce the caregiving staff last year in hopes of trying to reduce our losses, and had to raise it back up after our state survey last spring. We would have had to staff at 3.2 hours per day last year in order to meet, to break even and have just a zero bottom line. I'm again forced to look at staffing cuts. I have a consultant coming in on Monday from Ekumen to help us identify where can we streamline and get more efficient and reorganize. And we've already made some staff cuts through attrition. We've eliminated some office positions and management positions, cut back on dietary staff, cut back on housekeeping staff. But it's just something suffers every time you do that. We've seen schools have increased staff ratios. Smaller class sizes mean better education. No one wants to see children suffer. 25% of our residents in nursing homes are suffering emotionally as a result of yesterday's news headlines. I've seen the facility at Nopumming close. I presided there over the closure. It was heartbreaking. It's sad to see this kind of conflict among our staff and our residents and our families, and we're seeing burnout. Our staff they work double shifts. They are highest injured class of workers in our society, and they suffer the burnout, and the morale suffers, and the resident care suffers. So I just like to ask for some relief. Our case mix averages 1.20 at Chris Jensen. That is about almost 25% higher than the state average of 0.985. Our residents demand more care. We have a short-term rehab unit and an Alzheimer's secured unit. Both of those units require a higher staffing ratio. We take residents that have difficult behaviors, costly IV medications that many other facilities don't want to try to handle. And we have tried to absorb those costs, and this is what it's doing to our bottom line.
Even Ms. Kempe, we do have a number of additional bills, and I'd appreciate if we can wrap up soon.
Yeah, I don't have a lot more to add. It's just that we see the need for Chris Jensen in the community to stay in operation as a high level of care facility, and we want to maintain the high quality that we've tried to achieve and the good things that we're doing, but I'm very concerned for this facility.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Ungar, would you care to testify?
Mr. Chair, I'm just here to help.
Okay. Well, I do have at least a specific question. Can you give me sort of the average rate for your facility? And, I guess we can figure out where you would be because your increase is straight above the board. And if you have any feeling about what other nursing homes in the region are like.
I don't have the other nursing home information, but I do know our average rate is $172 roughly. And that's based on all of 2004 and roughly the current month.
Okay, and President Huntley, if you can get us any information about any rest of the area, I'd appreciate it. That would be helpful. And we do have a fiscal note that I think is $249,000 in fiscal year 06 and $272,000 in 05. And I guess looking at the size, we are talking about a fairly large facility. I think I can understand why it would be better. But besides that, Representative Huntley has had a history of having big numbers, so he's okay.
Yes, I realize that.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could add that, the county did close the one that's probably 10 miles from this one, and a lot of the staff moved over, and we don't think we laid anybody off, but it's the market in Duluth is fairly tight as far as the beds are concerned.
See no further questions. Representative Huntley, your news is motion that House File 1151 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Chair would suggest that maybe Representative Solberg, who's not a member of the committee, would be take his bill next, and we'll also try to get, I don't know if Representative Abel, if you have some people from outside as well here, I realize that. We'll try to get some. Representative Solberg,
Mr. Chair, mine will probably be 2 minutes long.
I'll move that House File 1380 be held open for possible inclusion. Representative Solberg, to your bill.
Mr. Chairman, the Riverwood Health Care Center was a hospital nursing home combination located in Aiken, Minnesota. They have built a new hospital and are still operating the nursing home part of the former hospital nursing home. They had an exemption for the moratorium to be able to, as I understand it, do some remodeling. They have 48 beds. I think they want to continue that 48 beds. This would just, as they are making that decision on how to find that finance and to be able to come up with the right type of remodeling of the nursing home, they have kind of avoided some of going forward real fast on it. And so what this bill does is give them one more year to do that. It extends it, I understand, from December 30th of 2005 to December 30th of 2006 for them to be able to do that. I talked with them this morning that right now they have two private rooms they want to make that in. They're planning to make it into 24 private. They have, I think, joint bathrooms. They want to be able to do the remodeling of and to allow more private bathrooms, air conditioning, new windows, that type of thing. But I think this additional year will give them an opportunity to do it in a correct fashion.
But it's over, it looks like this was originally approved in 2002, and I guess I don't remember if we've been here for a delay previously, but are they confident now that they're ready to proceed and that by that new deadline that would be completed?
Mr. Chairman, I asked that very question of them this morning on the telephone, and they said yes.
Okay.
I think when they first had the approval, they were also in the process of building the hospital and moving the hospital. So it's probably prudent for them to have taken their time and to continue to do the planning, but I asked that very question, and
yeah,
they said that was sufficient, because if it wasn't sufficient, I was going to extend it
earlier.
Well,
that certainly, I mean, since it's been that long a time, that's helpful. The other thing, and Michelle, maybe you can help me, I think I know how to interpret the fiscal note. Because it's being delayed, we're saving money that was sort of current law in the next 2 years, and the reason there's no money shown in the out years is that we probably booked that in current law because we adopted this previously. Michelle, am I on the right track?
Mr. Chair, you're on the right track.
Mr. Chairman, I assume the same. But you don't get very many offers for actually reducing your budget a little bit.
Well,
during this budget.
Mr. Silver, the only way that would even be better is if it was, I'm coming into the tails, but I think we already did this project before, and
right,
this is just a matter of delaying it.
Right.
And pretty straightforward. I'll renew my motion that House File 1380 be held open for possible inclusion. Thank you,
Representative. Thank you, and I said it would be 2 minutes.
You're right. So, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move that House File, what is it, 1250, just putting the consent calendar right from here. No, I guess you want it in the held over for possible inclusion.
Good luck.
Can I have an amendment?
Representative Abler moves the House File 1203 for possible inclusion. Representative Abler, you have an amendment?
I assume with the A1 amendment, and that'll get it in the condition. I'd like to talk about it, please.
Okay, but you'll explain what that this changes as
all
you go through the
bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler moves Amendment A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. The bill's amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, this has become much more controversial than I thought, and sometimes progress gets in the way of the current status of affairs, and we try to avoid hurting anybody. There'll be an amendment I would gamble by the time we get to our omnibus to further clarify this project, but I'll just try to lay it out for you. Crestview, which is a very well-run nursing home in the southern part of my county, has worked on an agreement with Ramsey, the city of Ramsey, to be part of their town center development and create an assisted living facility as well as a tacked-on nursing home. And it's part of the whole goal in some of this reorganizing and restructuring and right-sizing stuff is to have more continuum of care models. And Crestview has been working with the city for some time to deal with that. And they'll give some brief testimony. The controversy has to do with the effect on the surrounding providers, and I'm right in the middle of that again, Chair, so we'll hope that I can find some way to... there's a witness who will come and comment about their concerns from the Elk River side.
And we probably will have some ongoing discussion because there have been concerns expressed. We had counties go through kind of an assessment county by county, and we may want to harken back. I don't know if Ramsey County has got some of that. I know a lot of counties did some pretty detailed work in long-term care facility needs.
Oh, Mr. This is the city of Ramsey in Anoka
County. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In Anoka County. Anoka County is similar to that.
And what argues for the county as a whole is that we have the least number of beds in any category.
Yeah, I recall that.
We're at number 87. We're dead last, so we're first and last category.
Well, that apparently didn't persuade those who are concerned entirely yet.
And Mr. Then that's a discussion we'll have beyond today. But what the bill calls for is a moratorium exception to allow Crestview to take 25 of the laid-away beds and convert them into the nursing home. The amendment, as written, would allow 10 of those to be certified for medical assistance and 25 to be certified for Medicare.
If I may just check, we have a letter from someone with expressing concerns, and prior to this I haven't been offering because they were pretty straightforward. Was there someone here that wished to testify in addition to your testifies?
So I think there's time.
I'm just keeping track of the time here, so that there's a brief opportunity for them to testify as well.
Then the principal will maybe take 2 minutes.
Okay.
And then the opponent can have their time. So.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Shirley Barnes, the CEO of Crestview Senior Communities, which is a faith-based, not-for-profit organization that's been serving older adults since 1952. House File 1203 simply allows Crestview Senior Communities to remove the beds from the layaway status due to the legislation that Crestview took the initiative in 2001 to have enacted at that time. So this bill would allow us to remove 25 beds from layaway status and build them as part of a continuing of care retirement community, which is really the important part of this. It is part of the whole planned community in the Ramsey Town Center. The Ramsey Town Center has received a great deal of publicity recently because of its innovation. Our campus plans include senior housing of about 100 units, assisted living with memory care, and a 25-bed transitional care unit. When Crestview initiated the legislation in 2001, we planned to carry out our strategic plan to build a second campus in the northern part of Anoka County that meets the need for older adults, such as the Ramsey Town Center project. We're developing a campus that includes a continuum that older adults are seeking. We're developing a campus in a county that is growing, and indeed whose gaps analysis conducted in 2001 indicates there is a need for senior services and that there will be an inadequate supply of nursing home beds for the capacity in 2010. This project encourages older adults to move through the entire continuum of care and service without displacing them as they need more care. This project fits with the concept of transformation as it provides the continuum of care retirement community. The focal point is not the nursing home. The nursing home is simply a service provided when the need arises. There is no fiscal note for this legislation, and the concept of right-sizing means that the right beds will be in the right place at the right time. I would theorize that when a county is ranked 87th out of 87 counties for nursing home beds, that this is the right place and the right time to remove the beds from layaway status that we sought in 2001. In summary, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is this very type of community that is needed and desired by older adults, not only today, but into the future. There is no fiscal note. The project fits with the concept of transformation. The project fits with the gaps analysis conducted by Anoka County, and it creates a lifestyle continuum of care within a planned community. This project is the future. We're building the future of what older adults want in Minnesota. In summary, again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I ask for your support sincerely and would appreciate your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And if we may, those who have concerns. And Representative Abel, I feel a little bad because we probably don't have time for as much discussion as we should have, so we may need to... come back to this sometime for that. But
yeah.
In the meantime, we need to hear from, if you'd introduce yourself as you begin.
Yes, I'm Dan Dixon, President and CEO for Guardian Angels in Elk River, Minnesota. Representative Bradley and committee. We, on behalf of Guardian Angels, which is a faith-based nonprofit senior provider within 6 miles of this location, serves 1,100 seniors with our home care agency and our various housing in our 120-bed long-term care facility. We do question the thought that this is a zero fiscal note and would like to discuss that further. We wish to express our concerns, questions, and opposition related to House File 1203 regarding the moratorium exception and relicensing of 60 long-term care beds in the city of Ramsey by Crestview. I'd like to introduce Mark Peterson, our administrator for our skilled nursing facility, to explain the potential impact on us.
Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee. Please reintroduce yourself.
My name is Mark Peterson. I'm the administrator of Guardian Angels Care Center. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'd like to take a moment and share with you the impact that this proposal would have upon our 120-bed skilled facility, which is located approximately 6 miles from the Ramsey Town Center site. In fact, you can actually see the Elk River City Water Tower from this site. Currently, as well as for the past 40 years, Guardian Angels has been serving this area. Approximately 20% of our residents originate from the Ramsey Anoka area. We rely on this for our client base. It's been noted that this proposed facility in the past would be heavily dependent upon Medicare and insurance by licensing 25 or certifying Medicare 25 beds. We are also dependent upon those same pay sources. We need those payers to keep our doors open, as the current payment system for medical assistance and private pay does not. For example, if Guardian Angels were to lose approximately 20% of our Medicare clients and at best have them replaced by MA or private pay clients, we would see an annual revenue loss of approximately $182,000, which is the difference between what Medicare pays and what our set MA and private pay rates are currently. These are significant dollars. These dollars help us pay our staff and provide the care for the residents. Yesterday, I'm sure you all read the Minneapolis Tribune article on the front page that spoke of this very fact, that facilities are relying on Medicare and insurance to help stay in, to basically help keep the doors open and fund their operations. That's what we're doing in Elk River today. I can assure you that if this project materializes, that it will have a negative impact upon our care center. We do question the special legislation, as it does go against the current trend in Minnesota of downsizing the nursing home industry. Minnesota's two senior services associations have publicly emphasized that the nursing home industry needs to be right-sized. In fact, there have been recent discussions with the Department of Human Services to offer increased incentives to take beds out of service in our state. Also, with the alternative programs such as assisted living, home care, do we need additional beds in this portion of Anoka County, which is adjacent to Sherburne County, which is where we're located? We do question the need for the beds. In addition to Guardian Angels, there are also other providers servicing this area in the Anoka area. It's our belief that this area is adequately being serviced by our facility as well as the other providers. However, should there be a need identified for this area of the metropolitan area, we believe that the process should be opened up and be more competitive so that the existing providers in this area would have an opportunity to compete for these beds. Guardian Angels would very much welcome that opportunity to compete for those beds. I would also like to point out that there is legislation already approving the licensing of 22 additional nursing home beds in this portion of Anoka County and an existing provider. This legislation restricts the provider to that they can build a new facility within on their current site or within 4 miles of their current site. Why then does Crestview have the opportunity to build anywhere within Anoka County? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us. Lastly, I'd like to point out that this has been portrayed that this would be a 25-bed facility. And the reality of the matter is that they are asking for 60 beds. Given the 60 beds plus the 22 already on the books, this would be 82 additional new nursing home beds into this area. This is not what the area needs at this time, especially not during a funding crisis. Though we appreciate the efforts of Crestview and their desire to serve seniors, we question the timing and the need for the additional beds in this geographical area. It's our belief that this area is adequately being served at this time, and we respectfully request that this legislation be defeated. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Mr. Peterson, just to flip on this, because we are out of time, but you've heard that Anoka County is very low density in terms of current situation for nursing home beds. How do you respond to that?
That would be the entire Anoka County area. Is that, if you look at, we're basically 2 miles from the Anoka County line. We were not included in that. We service 1,100 seniors in about a 20-mile radius of Elk River, which is a considerable amount of people. There's also other providers, occupancy levels of those homes. Nobody's operating at 100% occupancy.
Representative Goodwin.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Barnes, I'm very familiar with Crestview, and it's an excellent establishment, and I give you a lot of credit for what you've done in the community and how well connected you are with the schools and so on. But I heard our testifiers say that it was 60 beds, and indeed it is not 60 beds, it is 25 beds. So can you clarify that for me?
Ms. Barnes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Goodwin, members of the committee, the amendment that was offered today by Representative Abler, the author of the bill, does take it down to 25 beds, yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Huntley?
Well, Mr. Chair, and I'm also familiar with Crestview. My mother-in-law spent her number of years there, and it is an excellent facility, and I like the idea of having apartments and then assisted living and then a nursing home all in one facility. I think that's what most of us would like when we get to that age. This is a really rapidly growing part of the state. We're going to have to deal with some additional hospitals there. That's not actually very far from this, and I occasionally drive through Ramsey when I get tired of fighting the traffic on the freeway, and I can assure you that this is a rapidly growing part of our state, and it's probably going to need, if Anoka is 67 out of whatever it was, 67, or I think they need beds.
Let me also clarify, sometimes we use interesting terminology. There is actually a fiscal note. The fact of the matter is that it nets off to zero because the revenue is balanced. So, I mean, just for clarification, there's no additional cost to us by this proposal. I'm very mindful of
Mr. Chair,
Michelle.
Just for reference for members as well, the fiscal note is written to 25 beds, not 60, so there is no confusion.
Thank you. I realize that this may continue, Representative Abler, with further discussion, and we will be holding it over for possible inclusion. Is there any other discussion from members before we proceed? And I'm mindful of the time. And I appreciate the testimony. I think we sort of have on the table what the concerns and issues are, and we also have the presentation of the actual proposal itself. With that, Representative Abler renews his motion that House File 1203 as amended be held over for possible inclusion.